Hello and welcome back to the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on ArrowheadAddict.com and on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. I say welcome back because I went on vacation for 2 weeks, then I come back and all of a sudden it's raining fire in Kansas City. Not just the weather, but Eric Berry is going to be on a one-year deal for the remainder of this Chiefs season. No contract extension for him. There's some names coming out of training camp that are very interesting very early on. Plus, I'm going to give you people to be watching in training camp. I'm going to give you a name from each position group that you need to be paying extra attention to going into this round of Chiefs training camp here in 2016. Plus, Nick Foles is a free agent. There's been some clamoring about him coming to Kansas City. I want to take a look at what it would mean if he does or doesn't come to the Chiefs. Plus, parking at Arrowhead and much, much more on this jam-packed episode as I'm back from vacation, nicely tanned, a little sunburned, and ready to talk some Chiefs football going into 2016 training camp. What to watch for, who to watch for in training camp for the Chiefs. I'm going to go through each position group, give you one player, in one case two players because I couldn't quite pick. One player from each position group that is going to demand extra attention as we go through training camp. Not necessarily names that will rise to the top, but guys that more or less we should be hoping rise to the top for the Chiefs out of these groups here. Let's start at quarterback. We all know Alex Smith is the guy here, and you should be grateful for that, especially if you're looking at other quarterback situations, not just around the league, but even around the division over in Denver. The quarterback I'm going to be watching most closely is Tyler Bray. He was sort of gifted with the responsibility of being the second string guy going into OTAs and coming out of OTAs. He's the guy on this Chiefs team who I think has the highest ceiling, I would say, out of this group. He also is the guy that I might trust the least, or I don't trust Kevin Hogan, the rookie, because we haven't seen him because he's a rookie. But Aaron Murray is a guy who I feel like his career path, his ceiling is roughly Chase Daniel, and his floor is probably just a below average Chase Daniel. Tyler Bray in his entire NFL career, as behind the scenes it has been, is a guy with some potential. He's volatile because he also was talked about, he was undrafted. He was talked about as being a little bit of a head case coming out of college, a guy where you might not be able to trust him with your team, with your franchise. He's still on the team. The Chiefs gave him a contract extension. This is going to be, and now they're giving him the number two position job. If he can not only stay on this roster, but can earn the second string quarterback job, it means Andy Reid and the quarterback coaches here and the dual offensive coordinators, Matt Nagy and Brad Childress, trust Tyler Bray. If they trust him at a backup role, I would be extremely interested to see what his talents could take him to as a starter whenever Alex Smith's era in Kansas City has come and gone. I don't feel that way about Kevin Hogan or Aaron Murray. I don't really care what they would do after Alex Smith. They're here in case Alex Smith goes down. If Tyler Bray can be both of those things, the quarterback of the future and the backup for now, that would be the best case scenario for the Chiefs at the quarterback position for this season and for the future. Running back, I wanted to write Nile Davis because I think there's an argument to be made that if he can look good enough to get traded, that's a win for the Chiefs, but that's a little bit mean and he's not going to be a part of this team whenever the actual season gets here. Jamaal Charles will not be practicing at camp as he continues to rehab. Spencer Ware is the guy that I'm going to be watching the most closely. The reason I picked him over Charkandrick West is because I think much more than Spencer Ware, West's load here is going to be bitten out a little bit by Jamaal Charles. Jamaal Charles is going to do what Charkandrick West will do or did last year, but better. West will still be a part of this offense. He'll help Jamaal Charles keep his carries down, even as he is trying to do what Jamaal Charles does. I'm glad that West is a part of this team. The Chiefs paid Ware and West. They see both of them, and they're paying Charles. They see all three of those guys as a real part of this offense, a real part of this team. That's all a very good thing. It's a good problem to have three running backs who you like. But Spencer Ware is the guy I'm going to be watching because I think his role might not change very much. I could see a situation where Spencer Ware is getting 30, 40% of the carries on this team, maybe even up to 50% of the carries. He won't get 50% of the touches because Charles and West are going to be the guys who catch the ball. But if you're in a situation where you just want to run the ball, I think Spencer Ware is somehow still underrated, not only throughout the NFL, but even among Chiefs fans. We've seen the Chiefs try over and over again, from Thomas Jones to Peyton Hillis, try to have a up-the-middle bruiser kind of back. Spencer Ware is neither of those guys, But compared to Jamal Charles and Turkandrick West, he is the more physical runner, the more one-cut kind of guy, but he's more finessed and better at football than a guy like Nile Davis is. So I'm interested to see what Spencer Ware continues to do, if he can continue to grow in this offense. I think he will, too. At tight end, the guy I'm keeping an eye on is Ross Travis. He's the name on the list that is the least well-known. Demetrius Harris is going to be the second guy. James O'Shaughnessy and Ross Travis are going to be the two fighting for that third tight end spot. Although I also have Brian Parker, who is a different type of tight end, almost an extra tackle. I think it was Adam Teicher, who had a 53-man roster a few weeks ago, that had the Chiefs carrying four tight ends. And it was James O'Shaughnessy, last year's draft pick, who was not on the team. Ross Travis and James O'Shaughnessy are going to be competing for the third pass catcher role if Brian Parker is seen as valuable enough to Andy Reid and to those offensive coordinators, then he'll be on as a totally different type of player. Kelce is the one, Harris is the two, Travis and O'Shaughnessy will be competing to be the three. Brian Parker is kind of a tight end tackle mix in a strange way. I'll be watching Ross Travis the most closely from the tight end group. To the offensive line, for the entire offensive line, Parker Anger, the rookie, is the guy I'm going to be keeping an eye on here in this group, because I am really rooting for him to take over at least one of the starting guard spots. I think ultimately, from what we've heard from Andy Reid and what we've seen so far from Anger, I think he's going to be the starting guard, one of the starting guards, come regular season, come game one, come week one. We're going to see Parker Anger on the side of Mitch Morse, a rookie and a second-year player side-by-side here with two veteran tackles. The other guard spot is also very interesting. I think we're going to see Ja Reed, LDT, and Zach Fulton all have a real case to take that other job. It gets a whole lot messier if Anger is not ready, and you have to give LDT and Fulton, or LDT and Reed, have to give any two of those guys starting jobs to start off the year. I think the Chiefs drafted Anger to be the guy week one. I think he's going to be, but we've got to keep an eye on it throughout this training camp. He's the guy to watch on the offensive line. On the outside, wide receiver group, I'm going to talk about Tyreek Hill later on. The most important guy, though, and it's not even close as far as development goes, is Chris Conley. Second year Andy Reid system, talked about Chris Conley a ton this offseason. I would argue that he is probably the most important player, or he will have the most important development this year. Not that he necessarily will, but if he doesn't, it's going to be devastating to this Chiefs offense. I think they're building an incredibly efficient and an incredibly well-weaponed offense around Alex Smith, guys that he can use well to his skill sets that will make a very powerful offense, probably the best offense in the AFC West, even though I think Derek Carr has the most power out of the quarterbacks, which is kind of a crazy thing to say. I think the Chiefs are going to have the best offense in the AFC West, but for that statement to come through, Chris Conley needs to continue to develop. I might be hedging a little bit here by saying Chris Conley's training camp performance is not going to determine if that works or not. His regular season performance is how he will know if he's going to actually take these steps or not. But regardless, he's the guy I'm going to be keeping the closest eye on, because we've got to see continued growth from Chris Conley. He's got to step into that number two receiver role. Albert Wilson can't do it. No one else is even close to ready. Jeremy Maclin is a star. Chris Conley needs to be the number two guy on this offense. Let's flip over to the defensive side now. On the defensive line, it's second-round pick and the first pick for the Chiefs this year. Chris Jones is the guy that I'm watching, because Dontari Poe, Jay Howard, and Alan Bailey could all do anything they want during this training camp, and it's not going to change my perspective on them. Those three guys are going to be holding it down. Chris Jones is going to have to fight for playing time, he's going to have to prove himself in camp in the preseason, and then throughout the regular season too. If any of those three guys slide, if Jones steps up, if any of those three starters slide, he can step in, or just need a breather, Jones can step in and make real moves on that defensive line. I'm thrilled about the Chiefs DL, everyone knows that. And I think Chris Jones is the guy to be watching going into the training camp on the defensive line. The linebackers were the more difficult position here for me to judge, so I split it into inside and outside linebacker a little bit. Justin March is the guy on the inside who I'm going to be keeping the closest eye on. He was making some really nice moves through training camp last year before he got injured and was out for the entire season. If he can continue to grow, hopefully he creates some competition for Josh Malga, Frank Zombo, get some playing time beside Derek Johnson. In the most ideal world, he continues to grow as a potential successor to Derek Johnson. He was an undrafted free agent. That's not the expectation for Justin March. That's the grandest hope. I think the more realistic one is that he just gets reasonable playing time as a part of this rotation and then continues to grow and eventually, again, maybe takes over as a starter somewhere down the line. But again, right now, a guy that we've seen, he was an undrafted free agent, played well last training camp and then got hurt. A ton of unknowns, but he's the guy. That's what you're looking for here in training camp. Guys with unknown, total unknowns who can actually contribute in the regular season. I think Justin March has that potential. The other linebacker on the outside that I'm watching, Justin Houston's not going to be participating in camp. We know that already. And Tom Bahali is old and doesn't need to be at camp, frankly. And he was taking off practice days for the regular season. The most important thing to Tom Bahali is you keep him healthy for as long as possible. I don't know if Justin Houston's going to be back week one. The Chiefs don't know. Justin Houston doesn't know. His doctors don't know. Whenever Justin Houston is back, we don't know how effective he's going to be, how long it will take him to get back to Justin Houston levels, if he will get back to Justin Houston levels. Total unknown. I think this might be this is at least the second year after this. Dee Ford is in a position right now where he needs to be able to step up and contribute. If he's only good at rushing the passer but can continually get to the quarterback, I'll take it. If he can be his generally average self at getting to the quarterback but can improve at stopping the run to where he's not a liability, I'll take that. I don't think Dee Ford's ever going to be the guy opposite Justin Houston as he was supposed to be whenever the Chiefs drafted him. He was supposed to be the successor to Tom Bahali. Didn't work, and probably never will work. This is the last season for any hope, frankly, for Dee Ford in my mind, of him getting to a new level. If this season he gets to an average level where he plays okay and isn't a liability, you can count that as a win on some level for the Chiefs. And I don't know if there's anything Dee Ford can, frankly, show me in training camp that's going to change my opinion on him. But he is the guy on the outside here who I'm hopeful for, who I'm hoping to see something interesting from. If not in camp, it's going to have to be around, or even in camp, it's going to have to show up in actual games. The secondary here, I saved the best for last. These are the training camp battles that I am just drooling to see. Weird metaphor, whatever. The safety I'm going to be watching most closely is a corner, most recently, Jamel Fleming. He's doing the Ron Parker thing, where he goes from being a bad outside corner to a safety, and probably a guy who can play the slot pretty well. They're both, Fleming and Ron Parker are physically similar. They had similar experiences on the outside. They've both been burnt by Peyton Manning. They know what it's like. And Jamel Fleming is getting the exact same staff that turned Ron Parker from a bad corner into a really, really good safety. Can't emphasize that enough. I feel like somehow still Ron Parker doesn't get the praise he deserves because we remember him as a terrible outside corner. I was right there with you. Ron Parker playing outside corner was a disaster of the highest order. At this point, he has turned into a really top-tier NFL safety, and I mean that. Jamel Fleming, if he makes 75% of that transition, the Chiefs will have a valuable asset in their backfield defensive and in their secondary. One other cheat mention at safety. I love this whole battle so much. Seeing what Stevie Brown can step in and do is going to be a blast. We believe in Ron Parker. Eric Berry will not be at camp. Covered all those points now. Charles, Houston, and Berry are not going to be on the field during training camp. I don't really. And also Eric Murray. Seeing if Eric Murray, the rookie, can get in significant playing time, who was a corner mostly in college at safety, will be interesting. But the guy there is Jamel Fleming. As far as corners go, the first thing I wrote down was everyone. Everything about this, maybe everyone except for Marcus Peters. This is such a volatile group, such a deep group, and such an insecure group right now. I could see guys who are listed right now on the depth chart as starters end up being the third guy, and vice versa. There is so much that could go wrong or could go right here. The number one player I'll be watching is the third rookie, I guess, on this list, Kavari Russell. Russell is going to be the guy, out of Notre Dame, third round pick. He's going to be the guy that pushes Philip Gaines. And I think Philip Gaines can play. I haven't seen him take very meaningful minutes outside. He played a little bit outside during Sean Smith's suspension at the beginning of last year before Gaines' injury. Gaines was drafted, in my estimation, to be a slot guy, but Steven Nelson seems to be taking over as the nickel corner. And if he can do that, superb, because it means Philip Gaines can truly battle it out for that outside spot. Kavari Russell, if he really blossoms, then maybe Gaines gets moved back to the inside, or Gaines becomes the third corner that you have quite a bit of faith in. I think ultimately it's going to be Peters, Gaines, and Steven Nelson, the quote-unquote veterans of the group, which is an incredible thing to say because it's rookie, or it's second-year player, third-year player, second-year player, respectively. But those guys are going to keep the leg up on the rookies. But if Russell can really show some flashes in training camp, he has the ability to take one of those starting spots. Well, only the second outside guy starting spot if he can outplay Phillip Gaines. But if everything else is a tie, the experience is going to be the tiebreaker, and Phillip Gaines will take the spot there. But man, I am thrilled to watch what happens with the secondary going out throughout training camp. I was surprised to see Eric Berry not sign a long-term deal with the Kansas City Chiefs as the franchise tag extension deadline came up a couple weeks ago now. Terrez Paylor had the most interesting bit of news out of the post-non-signing. Is that he tweeted, a bit of surprising news regarding Berry. I'm hearing the two sides never agree on a single component of a deal. Not one. I ask now, what does that mean? My interpretation there is that the Chiefs and Eric Berry disagreed on the number of years for the contract, the yearly salary of the contract, the signing bonus, the guaranteed money. All of those were points of contention that they never came to an agreement on. And that's pretty remarkable for a guy who is, it was your franchised player. I think what it means, especially from the Chiefs' perspective here, is this is the most self-serving way to look at it. They agreed with me. They agreed with the points that I was trying to lay out on the last episode of this show. I don't think John Dorsey's listening, but if he is, you got this one right. John Dorsey's definitely not listening. The Chiefs look at Eric Berry as a guy who has significant value on this team. So do I. However, the pricing on his value falls far short of making him the third, second, or number one highest paid safety in football. The things he's good at can be bought more cheaply. If you listen to the last show, I will save you rehashing that. If you missed the last episode, go back and listen to it on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/RTK, or on iTunes, or on Arrowhead Addict. You can listen to the show in any of those places and hear. The point that I'll generally make, though, this is a passing league. Eric Berry's biggest strength is his run-stopping ability, and whenever Derek Johnson is healthy, Eric Berry doesn't need to make those plays where he stops the play up the middle, because Derek Johnson has already done that about 3 yards farther up the field. I like Eric Berry very much. I like having him as a safety on this team. As a part of the rotation last year, he was great. I will contend over and over that Ron Parker is the most valuable safety on this team. And so I think the Chiefs made the right move here, especially because they weren't nearly as close as we were hearing that they were. Before the deadline, Arrowhead Pride tweeted, "Can't say for sure, but based on reports, it sure seems like the Chiefs and Berry are between $10 and $12 million per year. Seems reasonable to bridge that." I would think it certainly would be. With the history that Eric Berry has had, the cancer, coming back from the cancer, was a remarkable story that kind of put his health in a different kind of question than like guys who were injured frequently. But considering his past, he did get a great rookie contract. But in just the volatility of playing a year at safety in the NFL, if he was being offered $10 million a year, I would think that he would have caved at the end and said, "We'll take it." A few points of contention, though, kind of made the whole story a little bit more confusing. The Chiefs reportedly asked Eric Berry and his agent and as part of the contract to pay for a disability policy that listed the Chiefs as a beneficiary, which would have been reportedly a $20 million policy that would have been a $2 million premium for Berry to pay. That was very, and also apparently the Chiefs backed off from that as the contract discussions were going on. It's a very weird request to make, but the Chiefs did continue to pay Eric Berry whenever they didn't have to, as he was going through treatment and everything. I don't think that's some grand dishonor from the Chiefs put on Eric Berry, but that's very odd. Previous to the actual contract being signed, another tweet from Arrowhead Pride that I thought was interesting in a different way is they tweeted, "Interesting watching the fan reaction. Some say Chiefs deserve loyalty. Others say Chiefs are being cheap, little more than 24 hours to go before the deadline came around." I think both of those views are completely impractical. And if you feel that way, I think you're missing kind of the fundamental basis for what these contract discussions are. The Chiefs don't deserve loyalty from Eric Berry because they, paid him through his treatment or whatever. And the Chiefs don't owe Eric Berry anything beyond the contract that they've already signed him to and the money that the franchise tag will entail. And that's not even, Eric Berry hasn't signed the franchise tag yet. They don't even owe him that. There is an element of you want to take care of your own in all of sports. And I think this analogy is really interesting. So God, I've said interesting a lot of times today, so don't ever play a drinking game on the word interesting during this show. I apologize if you are already. You won't remember the last 20 minutes of the show, at least. Back after Barry officially didn't sign the extension with the Chiefs at the deadline, I was reading a bit about Barry, and a potential comparison here dawned on me. There are some real similarities between Eric Berry and the Chiefs and Dwayne Wade and the Miami Heat. If you don't know about the NBA, Dwayne Wade recently signed the deal with the Chicago Bulls after playing his whole career in Miami. He is completely beloved in Miami, probably the most beloved athlete in Miami sports history. In both cases, in both instances here, both sides wanted to let it look like they were working hard to reach an agreement, but both sides also knew that they were better off not reaching one. The Chiefs and the Heat were both better as a team planning for that Eric Berry or that Dwayne Wade money elsewhere for the future. It made sense for the Heat to say, we're going to rebuild now, couldn't get Kevin Durant. It hurts to let Dwayne Wade go, but we're going to spend this money elsewhere and build for the future. For the Chiefs, they looked at what Eric Berry's good at, they looked at his value, looked at who else they have around the safety position, not this year because they want him for this year, but for the future, how they think it's going to pan out. Both the Heat and the Chiefs said, all right, we need to go elsewhere with this space, this money. And Dwayne Wade is making more money in Chicago. Eric Berry will make more money somewhere else next season. I do think this is the end of Eric Berry and the Chiefs after this 1 year of kind of one kind of victory lap, if it actually goes well for the Chiefs and Eric Berry. But the complicating factor here is what the fan bases want. Miami loves Wade. Kansas City loves Eric Berry. Nobody in either of those situations wanted a messy divorce, so we have these two situations now. And again, the Chiefs get one more year with Eric Berry. But both the Heat and the Chiefs wanted to look like an organization reaching out an olive branch for their player and saying, all right, you have to take a little bit of a hometown discount, perhaps, something Dwayne Wade's dealt with his entire career, and something that Eric Berry has never dealt with before. But here's an olive branch, here's an offer, we want to keep you here, we're going to do everything we can to show people that we really want you back, guys. When in reality, they knew having the player return to the team was not the best thing for the team. And for Dwayne Wade and Eric Berry, they both knew that taking a pay cut to stick with the team they're with right now was not the best thing for them. I don't think anyone is at fault here. I don't think that not signing Eric Berry, as a lot of places have painted it, even sites and people I really respect a lot, saying, you know, this is a failure of both sides. This is something where both parties needed to come together at the middle and meet a little bit and say, all right, shave $1 million off this side, $1 million off this side on a yearly thing, make the guaranteed money this, have this many years. We can come to a compromise. If both sides wanted to come to a compromise, they would have. I don't think this is an issue of one side getting a little too stingy. The Chiefs asking Eric Berry to pay a $2 million premium on an insurance policy feels that way. Apparently they backed off of that. Don't know if that impacted the final negotiations or not. And though it is a cap sport where $1 million or $2 million a year does matter in a big way, if the Chiefs said, listen, we've got to get Eric Berry back. He is this valuable on this team with this roster for this many more years. We have to have him back. They would have done it. If Eric Berry said, I want to be here. This number is going to be high enough. This is where I'm going to make the money. This is the place I want to be. They would have caved in a little bit. I think it's more on the Chiefs than on Eric Berry, because Eric Berry has a pretty defined open market value. The Chiefs simply decided that they weren't going to pay that. And that's okay. If you're a Chiefs fan, you should be glad that you have a front office with the backbone to say to one of those beloved players across the fan base, listen, we love you, we know the fan base loves you, but we're not going to pay the market value for you right now because we don't think you're worth it. That's a good thing that you have that discerning of a front office. John Dorsey didn't do that with Dwayne Bowe, and we all wish he would have. On the other hand, they're paying Jeremy Maclin giant money. They're paying Alex Smith quarterback money. They went and got Mitchell Schwartz. This team is beginning, if it hasn't been for the whole Reed Dorsey era, this team is now spending money smartly. That's all you can ask from a front office, is that they spend their money well and get good production out of their draft picks. Right now, the Chiefs are getting a good direction with both of those things. So while it stinks to think that this is the last year for the Chiefs and Eric Berry, if they win this year, significant things this year, you're not going to have it overshadowed by Eric Berry leaving. like Johnny Cueto. I'm looking at a Sports Illustrated right now of the Royals celebrating World Series. Johnny Cueto's in San Francisco now. No one is going, oh, man, that 1 year, that half a season with Johnny Cueto, that was great. They won the World Series. But, man, I wish Cueto was back. I really can't enjoy that after the fact. No one is saying that. The Chiefs win. You're not going to remember Eric Berry leaving the year after. Or you'll remember it, but it's not going to matter because it'll be with a championship or a playoff win or an AFC championship game even. The Chiefs made the right call here. And while the you know, kind of the emotional pang of it might stick around for a little bit, for me, frankly, it's gone already. You should be glad that the Chiefs had the guts to say to one of their most beloved players, probably their single most beloved player, you're asking for too much, and the most important thing here is the future of the team. In the early days of Chiefs training camp, as quarterbacks and rookies were reporting, the most talked about Chiefs draft pick was the most talked about player on the field, and that's rookie wide receiver and punt return, kick return specialist Tyreek Hill. A few notes from camp before the commentary that you're, you know, just on the edge of your seat for. B.J. Kissel, so the top pass of the day at Chiefs camp went from Alex Smith to Tyreek Hill deep down the right sideline on a hitch and go. Result was an 80-yard touchdown. Herbie Tiopi, two straight days with players at Chiefs camp, and a name that continues to come up is wide receiver Tyreek Hill. Players uniform in raving about Hill's speed. Chiefs wide receiver Mike Williams, via Arrowhead Pride, who played with 2012 Olympic long jumper, and Bills wide receiver Marquise Goodwin in Buffalo. Williams said about Hill, quote, quick man, fast. That speed, I played with Goodwin in Buffalo, haven't seen anything like this. He's quick and fast, and I can't wait till the world gets to see him. Tyreek Hill is, in fact, quick and fast. And if you want to hear the, like, play-by-play breakdown of what my thoughts were after the Chiefs drafted him, the draft show is archived where you can get to it, like the other episodes in iTunes, blogtalkradio.com/RTK, arrowheadaddict.com. It's well documented. The main takeaway I had from the Chiefs drafting Tyreek Hill is that the acceptance of Tyreek Hill will go exactly as far as his kick returns do. If he looks like Devin Hester at any given time, no one will be talking about his domestic abuse past. If he is, if he looks like Frankie Hammond Jr., people will immediately be in the neck of the Kansas City Chiefs like a vampire sucking for blood. And that's how this is always going to play out. It's already turning that way based off of his performance in training camp, and it's only going to get magnified more and more as the season goes on. And I would say that's okay. I don't know if that's okay or not. I think it's still a little bit challenging to kind of rationalize him being on the team with his past, which, again, the phrase beating and strangling his pregnant girlfriend is really bad. That's a really bad phrase to have attached to you forever. So I think that being attached to him forever, I think is frankly reasonable. It's also okay that he has a job. I wish the Chiefs wouldn't have been the team to give it to him, but again, if he performs well, that's all going to end up being water under the bridge very, very quickly. I will now move to assessing him football-wise. The one thing the Chiefs never did or didn't do enough, in my estimation, with Dexter McCluster and D'Anthony Thomas, which are the two guys who came before Tyreek Hill, is to use them to stretch the field. When you've got that crazy speed that was a part of Dexter McCluster's arsenal, that was the reason D'Anthony Thomas became a part of this team. We're talking about that crazy speed, and then trying to turn those guys into running backs. For McCluster, it was mainly out of the backfield. For D'Anthony Thomas, it was mainly backfield and slot stuff that never got off the ground 100%. I think that's a waste, in a lot of cases, of their raw speed. If you're the fastest guy in the field, and you can get behind a corner, and you're all of a sudden behind the corner going down the sidelines 20 yards downfield, and Alex Smith drops the ball into your hands, and then you've got 60 yards open field in front of you. I wish we saw more of that with D'Anthony Thomas and Dexter McCluster. The fact that we might be seeing that with Tyreek Hill is a positive for me. And Tyreek Hill, I think, is going to run D'Anthony Thomas out of town. The Chiefs wouldn't have taken Hill if they didn't think that he was going to be good enough to do that. That would have been it'll be a bad look if they cut Hill. I think there's almost no chance they cut Hill before the regular season or anytime during the season, because not only did they then take a risk on a person, they took a risk on a football player that didn't come through to even make it through training camp as a fifth-round pick. So he'll be on the team, which I think will mean D'Anthony Thomas will not be. To be able to use him not only in the return game as the kick returner and the punt returner, but down the sidelines and as a slot guy, he could be, if he can get up to speed in Andy Reid's system quickly, could be very valuable. That's, for me, the biggest question, is not only a rookie coming in to the NFL and trying to get up to NFL speed, you know, like game speed, not just raw speed as a person, but the speed of the game, that's a huge challenge. That challenge might be double what it is in somewhere like, no shade to Baltimore, but in Baltimore or Jacksonville or Tennessee or Indianapolis, you can pick any kind of run-of-the-mill system. That learning curve, if it lines up, you're running a, you go from Florida to Baltimore or whatever, I could see a rookie having an impact there. I have a very hard time seeing a rookie come into Andy Reid's system and have a significant impact. That's just a part of the West Coast system. It's a part of Andy Reid's systems and the way that Andy Reid runs a roster. With that being said, that's why I think Chris Conley is so important this year in his second year in Reid's system. I think Tyreek Hill will be significantly limited by being a rookie. If he can get into the books and become a trustworthy weapon, it seems like his physical skills are off the charts. So his name is going to keep popping up throughout training camp, hopefully at the preseason, hopefully into the regular season, as a guy whose crazy talents just go far beyond and overcompensate for his newness in the system. We've already established the news here. Justin Houston's rehabbing in St. Joe, won't be on the field during training camp. Same seems to be the case for Jamaal Charles. Eric Berry hasn't signed his contract, won't be there for a long time. Got all that out of the way? Great. Okay, let's talk quarterbacks who aren't currently on the roster, like it's draft day all over again. The Los Angeles Rams released Nick Foles on Foles' request, and immediately the speculation showed up of, would the Chiefs be interested? Well, Andy Reid was interested in Nick Foles. He was in Andy Reid's last year in Philadelphia. He drafted Nick Foles. The Chiefs just drafted Kevin Hogan. Seemed to be pretty comfortable with Tyler Bray and Aaron Murray, but frankly, they're both really unknown quantities that we don't know that much about, and even the Chiefs have never seen them on the actual field, preseason notwithstanding. Let's look at what it would mean for the Chiefs to pursue Nick Foles, and then also what we'll learn either way. Nick Foles of the Chiefs would mean giving up on either Bray and Murray, the two guys that have been developing on your roster for a few years now, and having two brand new quarterbacks behind Alex Smith, being Nick Foles and Kevin Hogan as the 2 and 3, or keeping one of those guys and then punting your fifth-round pick, which is something that would surprise me very much. Letting Hogan go immediately seems very un-Chief-like to me. If Reid likes what Foles is going to bring in his experience and the physical tools he has as a short-term backup option, as a long-term option, whatever reason, I think it's going to lead to Bray and Murray both going. Unless, as some people on Twitter reminded me very graciously, unless someone mysteriously sprains their thumb and has to go to the IR for a 22-week-long sprained thumb recovery, which the Chiefs have done constantly. If you're not familiar, the Chiefs have ended up putting one of their fourth quarterback on the injured reserve for the last couple of seasons now. In one case, I think it was like a thumb for Tyler Bray. Last year, he tore his ACL playing basketball, so that's neither here nor there, though. The Chiefs probably are able to put one of those guys on IR. The guy I would try to be putting there, unless you really, really value his practice reps, would be Kevin Hogan, because he is a non-factor for this year. Not right now. I was talking about Tyreek Hill not being ready for Andy Reid's system, and hoping that Chris Conley is ready, as those guys are receivers. A rookie quarterback in Andy Reid's system sounds like a nightmare to me. So maybe they try to get Kevin Hogan on the IR, and if they were to pursue Nick Foles, then we would have either Bray or Murray go this year. I also think there's a really good chance that Hogan's the third guy, and then Bray and the Chiefs make a decision on Bray or Hogan and say, one of you is our second guy now, we'll take the risk. One of you is going to, at the best case scenario, practice squad or to some other team or out of the league. But here's why the most interesting thing I'm getting from this Nick Foles scenario is that either way, Nick Foles is now a public litmus test for how much Andy Reid and the Chiefs like Murray and Bray. If they like both of those guys better than Foles, you keep them. You like either of those guys less, Foles can step in pretty quickly. The Chip Kelly system is extremely different from what Andy Reid does, but Andy Reid knows that Nick Foles could run his system. That's why he drafted him in Philadelphia, presumably as the quarterback of the future there. I think Andy Reid would trust Nick Foles to step in and be the backup and run a kind of a dumbed-down version of the West Coast offense until he was fully comfortable with it. I think he would be pretty happy to say, listen, this guy can be subpar Alex Smith if Alex Smith goes down for a couple of weeks. But If the Chiefs think that Aaron Murray or Tyler Bray can do that, you want to keep that guy who either of those guys have a higher ceiling of development down the road. Nick Foles just got cut by the Rams, who had to just take a quarterback at the very, very top of the draft to kind of restabilize their franchise. Nick Foles is not going to be a cure-all by any means. I would rather gamble on Tyler Bray as a long-term option, and I don't think Tyler Bray is going to end up being one, but I kind of like what he's got. Either way, if the Chiefs don't make a move on Nick Foles, don't even bring him in for a workout, whatever, they're saying, we know what Nick Foles is, and we're standing pat with the three guys we have behind Alex Smith, and we're going to let those three guys fight. Two of them are going to be on an active roster behind Alex Smith, one of them every week, one of them will be holding the clipboard ready to go in case something happens, third guy will be ready in case something happens twice. I think that's interesting. I think we're going to actually, we get told all the time by Andy Reid what they think about the quarterbacks. You know, Tyler Bray is getting the second guy, the second man reps. He's getting the backup reps. He's the guy we have going forward right now. We hear that all the time. You can look at practice reps as an indicator. But right now, we're going to really, really see. If you went in and asked Andy Reid 3 weeks ago, said, hey, who do you like better, Tyler Bray or Aaron Murray versus Nick Foles? He never would have answered that. Or he would have answered it like, oh, we like our guys. We like the guys that we have. Well, now we get to see it because that's a real option now. It's instead of your girlfriend saying, is she pretty? Is she prettier than me? It's that girl coming over to you and saying, hey, you want to get out of here? You go, no, I'm with you have to now put your money where your mouth is. That was a very strange analogy that I regret making, but I'm going to go ahead and leave it there in the past. Money where their mouth is now. We get to see what the Chiefs think about their young quarterbacks versus Nick Foles. This is the part of the show where I say something self-promoting. If you're not already subscribed to this show on iTunes, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Just search Roughing the Kicker, and I will be there. We're going to try to get a more sustainable schedule where these shows are coming out consistently as we get closer to the season, and then certainly in the season. But make sure you never miss an episode. Subscribe on iTunes through an Android podcast app, however you may get it. We're really close, I think, to having the show on TuneIn and Stitcher very soon. More options to get the show however you want to. It'll always be on Arrowhead Addict and blogtalkradio.com/RTK also. You can follow me on Twitter at JB Briscoe. That's the best way I have to interact with you as the listener. I want to hear your feedback, your ideas. I've had a lot of good feedback from listeners about Eric Berry and that whole situation. I got shockingly positive feedback, people that agreed. I was very glad to hear that you all enjoyed that show. Or at least those of you who talked about it enjoyed that show and appreciated the perspective I was bringing on it. You can review the show on iTunes. That helps it bring it up the charts. I don't know how, but that's what people tell me. And that helps more Chiefs fans find this show. If you have Chiefs fans in your life, which I know you do, and they want to hear about the Chiefs, which we know they do, I would love it if you would pass this show along to them, because I want as many Chiefs fans to be hearing this show as possible. Point blank. If you want to support the show even on the next level, you can go to patreon.com/RTK. That's patreon.com/RTK. Support the show financially. You can throw some money to me, and I will continue to make these shows consistently. Hopefully have the quality be getting better and better as we go. People have done that already. Don Beal, at DonBeal32 on Twitter. Andy Stimson, Stephen Smith, Derek Vaughn, at D_Vaughn88. Those guys are all in the $20 group. They've been throwing me $20 a month for a while now. I am super grateful that you think this show is worth your money voluntarily. Also, huge thanks to Ty Declare at TyDeclare44 on Twitter, been around forever, and Josh Beadle in the $5 group. Your financial support makes this show free for everybody else. Now it's running through Blog Talk Radio, where I got maybe three ads a show, one at the beginning, one in the middle, and one at the end, roughly. That's kind of the formula. Just sitting there and listening to those ads and not shutting off the show as soon as you hear it is helping this show every time. There'll be another ad here in a second, I'm sure. I appreciate that tremendously. Just your patience to say, I understand that this ad is supporting this show, means a lot to me personally, and it means a lot to being able to keep this show sustainable. So I am frankly just super grateful that I get to do this show for people who really care about it. And as always, you can give me suggestions, feedback on the show on Twitter at JB Briscoe, on Facebook at facebook.com/RTK show. And I will always try to keep the self-promoting segments relatively short. Thank you for your patience. I promise I do care about your questions and do care what you think. And now to show that, here's somebody who's been submitting questions for a long time now, and I keep pushing them back. So here's trying to get a couple in from Keyshawn Brown on Twitter, at ChiefPriest_25, who's been throwing me stuff for weeks now, which I appreciate greatly. He said, I'm wondering what McNabb did in his fourth year under Andy Reid, and then if Alex Smith can do that, you know, what does that mean? And then so Donovan McNabb's career path is a little more complicated here because Alex Smith obviously has his past in San Francisco, and this is his fourth year with Andy Reid. McNabb, 1999, ended up starting 6 games and played in 12, but wasn't the guy. So we're going to say, we're going to count out that year and then count down 1, 2, 3, 4 years down as a starter, because he only also played 10 games in 2002. But 2003 is there I'm going to look at for Donovan McNabb as kind of the exercise. Also, age 27, Alex Smith is going to be 32. It's very different career paths, but it's in that development of the quarterback under Andy Reid. And in 2003, for Donovan McNabb, the team ended up going 12-4. He had a sub 60% completion percentage, 57.5%, threw for over 3,000 yards, 16 touchdowns, and 11 interceptions, and also was sacked 43 times, the second highest of any year of his career. No, sorry, third highest of any year in his career. 43 sacks is a lot. For the record, Alex Smith last year was sacked 45 times. The year before that, 45 times. Alex Smith spends a lot of time on the ground in Kansas City. That's one enormous thing that needs to change. But Donovan McNabb's that 2003 year with Andy Reid was suboptimal, you could say. In 2004, the year after, he was 13-2 as the starter, 31 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. The year that year following it as a 28-year-old quarterback was the Donovan McNabb year that I think most of us remember most vividly when you look back, and also the year they ended up going to the Super Bowl. That year mattered. There's so many factors. I want to be able to say, well, McNabb this and Alex Smith did this. I like looking at those comparisons. I like looking at those splits. But I can't. There are so many factors that play into these things. Again, Alex Smith, the 3 years he's been in Kansas City, has been sacked 39, 45, and 45 times. As I mentioned a few weeks ago, when he is not under pressure, Alex Smith is better than Tom Brady when Tom Brady is not under pressure. That might be the single greatest factor for how good Alex Smith can be. And again, last year, if you look at his numbers, 20 touchdowns, 7 picks, and almost 3,500 passing yards, his greatest passing performance as far as yards go in his career at age 31, it's fine. But you're not going to be fully content with 20 touchdowns, even though the most he's ever thrown is 23 back in his first year as a Chief. Donovan McNabb and Alex Smith, although I do like looking at the way they performed under the same head coach in a very, very similar system that's evolved somewhat throughout Andy Reid's career, there are so many factors. They're so different. So many factors in what they can do. Frankly, Alex Smith is more mobile, is a better runner, because that's his most underrated trait for all time. But he's not the quarterback that Donovan McNabb was that Super Bowl year. At least he's not whenever he's under pressure. Is Alex Smith a potentially... elite is such a strong word. Is he a top of the middle class? Is he an upper middle class? I've been watching a lot of election stuff. Is Alex Smith an upper middle class quarterback whenever his pocket is clean? Yeah, he might be lower upper class at that point. Alex Smith is going to have a heck of a squad around him, not only the offensive line, but the weapons he's going to be able to use this year with Andy Reid's offense and the guys he's going to be delivering the ball to. There are so many factors here that as much as I love to be able to look at what Donovan McNabb did and try to compare those two things, at this point, taking 1 year and 1 year and saying the fourth year of Donovan McNabb and Andy Reid's system and the fourth year of Alex Smith's, it's just not comparable because Alex Smith grew up in San Francisco in a totally different offense. Donovan McNabb grew up with Andy Reid, and then as it developed, it's just a totally different developmental path. So if Alex Smith has Donovan McNabb's 2004 year statistically, yes, obviously everything is going to be superb. If he has the statistical year that he had in 2003, people are going to be freaking out again. There are so many factors involved here that I regardless of Donovan McNabb, I believe what I'm about to say. Alex Smith is going to be more comfortable with Andy Reid. Andy Reid's going to be more comfortable with Alex Smith than they've ever been with each other. Just the system of being together for longer. More trust together, more of a dynamic together, a more constructive dynamic together. Alex Smith and Andy Reid are ready to go. This is the best set of weapons Alex Smith has ever had. This is the best offensive line Alex Smith has ever had. This offense and Alex Smith and Andy Reid are all on the front lines right now. This is the year when we all need to be having that entire offensive unit under the microscope saying, let me see your flaws. You shouldn't have that many. this offense should be the strength of this team whenever the defense is really good. If Chris Conley plays like a number two receiver and Albert Wilson plays like a reasonable slot receiver and the running back system, or the running back three-headed monster the Chiefs have is superb, Andy Reid is a well-respected offensive mind, Alex Smith will get that job done to make that offense a top 10 offense in the NFL this year. I believe that regardless of what Donovan McNabb did in a different situation. A couple other quick questions from Keyshawn. I'm going to blast through here. Seeing what Mo Wilkerson got the Jets defensive lineman, what does that mean for Dontari Poe next offseason? I think right now the Chiefs only have one way of keeping Dontari Poe next offseason, and it's if they use the franchise tag on him. Keeping one more year of Poe, if Chris Jones seems to be coming up a little bit slowly or that defensive line is just so dominant, I could see them doing that. I don't think they're going to be able to afford a long-term deal for Dontari Poe. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Chris Jones is here to be that guy. Unless they end up saying, we're going to try to give Dontari Poe, we believe in Dontari Poe, have to give him the giant money and then let Jay Howard walk or let Alan Bailey walk and then move Chris Jones to an outside spot. I want to keep those four guys together as long as possible. The way to do that is to franchise tag Dontari Poe next year, which means Eric Berry walks and you've got to get your other long-term contracts locked up. I don't see a long-term deal for Dontari Poe happening. But I've been wrong about long-term deals as recently as like last week when I thought the Chiefs would sign Eric Berry. I'm glad they didn't. Do you think now is a good time for one of the young inside linebackers to play next to DJ? Cut Mauga next season, have one of them get good reps. I mentioned Justin March earlier. I think we're going to see those guys get good enough reps already. Josh Mauga is an underrated player on this Chiefs team, and his importance is underrated. He's going to be the second guy, I think, beside Derek Johnson the most. Frank Zombo and Josh Mauga, I think basically we know what they are, but I think what Josh Mauga is actually underrated. I think he's actually better than how we talk about him. It's always nice to try to get reps to the young guys because the young guys are unknown, but I think if Justin March ended up being as good as Josh Mauga is right now, we would think of Justin March's career as generally a positive. So I'm not in any hurry to get those other guys out of the way, but I do hope Justin March earns some playing time here. Again, from Keyshawn, does this offense help lift the weight of the defense if it struggles until Houston returns? Yes, it can. This offense should lift the weight off the defense. This offense should be carrying this team just as much as the defense is. I think this team has a really high ceiling. I honestly do. But the only way it happens is if the offense and the defense both strive. I think the defense is going to take a little bit of a step back from what we saw last year. Losing Sean Smith is enormous. The secondary is getting shakier. And losing the depth even at the safety position makes the defense worse. Adding Chris Jones makes the defense better. But I think the defense, with or without Justin Houston, is going to be taking a little bit of a step back. The offense should be taking a step forward, as I just mentioned from the last question about Alex Smith and Donovan McNabb. Yes, 100%. The offense should be taking the weight off the defense with or without Justin Houston to start off the season. Now let's look outside of Kansas City for a moment here because it impacts who the Chiefs are going to be playing in the first 4 weeks of the season. Let's look at the Chiefs' opponents here. At Pro Football Doc on Twitter talked about J.J. Watt's injury. First of all, I guess Ian Rappaport said, Texans defensive lineman J.J. Watt's surgery was for a herniated disc, source said. He had symptoms while working out on his own. 8-week return is the best case. Dr. David DeChow on Twitter said, confirmed to be a herniated disc. Surgery recovery is quick, but rehab is extended. Unlikely to be 100% until mid-season. The Chiefs play the Texans in week 2. So not only will the Brock Osweiler Texans be Brock Osweiler-led Texans for this Chiefs game, they could very well be without J.J. Watt, or if J.J. Watt is around, will certainly be a limited J.J. Watt. Simply good news for the Chiefs in Week 2. Week 4, going to Pittsburgh, is one of the most daunting games on the Chiefs' schedule. Le'Veon Bell is now facing a 4-game suspension for missing drug tests. He says he will not be serving it. He said they're appealing it. That's something to keep an eye on for sure. I was going to say for certain or for sure. I said for sure. Certainly something to keep an eye on as a Chiefs fan. We want to see Le'Veon Bell not playing that game in Week 4. I think it's not going to matter. I think the Steelers team is going to be extremely good this year if their defense is worth half of what it should be worth, if it improves at all from last year. But J.J. Watt being injured and Le'Veon Bell potentially being suspended, too big outside of the NFL, outside of Kansas City news, bits of news, for what the Chiefs schedule looks like now before training camp actually kicks off. Last bit of news here, I'm not even going to blow a whistle for it because it's pretty quick, but the situation with the Chiefs and parking is has really earned the ire of a lot of Chiefs fans. The parking pass price has gone up from $30 at the gate to $40 at the gate, but it's still $30 if you pay in advance. The Chiefs have reportedly, supposedly said that this isn't to make more money on parking. I mean, it kind of is, but it's in hopes that people will pre-buy their passes online, a $10 incentive to do that, so everything moves more quickly on game day. I also believe that's the intent, and that would be nice. Being able to park more quickly at the same price makes a lot of sense, so I'm not going to crush Chiefs for that. Plus, Brandon Kiley on Twitter looked at some other similar markets. Baltimore is $40, Green Bay is $40, Pittsburgh is $40, Denver $30, Tennessee $30, down to Cincy is $22, Indy is $20. But overall, $40 for parking is pretty much on par. The Chiefs is still $30 if you pay in advance, so just pay in advance, get in more quickly, and everybody will be happier on game day. At the same time, I think it is becoming more like a concert. Every NFL game is more like a concert where you say, oh, I'm going to go see this band. I really want to see this band. Tickets are super expensive, and I got to pay for parking, and you got to pay for food and drink while you're there. But it's a, you know, once in a lifetime, once a year, whatever, once in a year kind of opportunity. I know there are people listening right now who are season ticket holders, but to be going every single week, the 8 times the Chiefs are playing at home, seems kind of nuts to me. It's a huge financial investment. But again, if you have a winning team and an atmosphere as great as being in the stands at Arrowhead, I also totally get it. That's going to do it for this episode of the Ref and the Kicker Chiefs podcast on ArrowheadAddict.com, on Blog Talk Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. As always, I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe, on Twitter at JBBriscoe, JBBRISCO. These 50-some minutes of the show, I hope you forgive my extended vacation, because I've now brought back an extended podcast. Training camp is kicking off as I speak, and shows will only continue to get longer and more frequent, which is good news for all of us, unless you really hate my voice, in which case you're not listening right now anymore. So let me know what you want me to cover, what you want to be hearing about, what topics you want to get my opinions on, what I ought to be researching, what I ought to be looking into, questions you have, anything that you think should be a part of this podcast. Get it to me, let me know, and I will do my very best to dig into it and bring you answers and commentary and insight and mindless speculation as only I can. As always, thank you for listening. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Bye, Mom!
Excuse me, sir, but could you drop the bass?